Yeah, that's right. He's a motherfucking G. Yeah.
Welcome back to the Bruce Allen Show with Dad's Point of View. You can email me at bruce@brucesallan.com. That is Bruce and Sallan, S-A-L-L-A-N. That's S like Sam's. Pastor Drew Sams is my guest for some spiritual talk. He is the head pastor at Bel Air Presbyterian Church in Bel Air, California. He and his wife, Erica, are the proud parents of Judah Andrew Sams, who's about 26 months old. Welcome back to the show, Pastor Drew.
Bruce, thanks for having me on again.
So let's have our health and welfare update on your young son.
Well, my son, you know, I think the months better than I do. He is exactly 26 months. last week he was 26 months. Pretty phenomenal. But he's doing great. You know, he broke his arm. We've been sharing that every week, and he's healing up. And I actually was able to spend 2 full days with him this week. Our normal caregiver, while my wife works part-time, was traveling. So I got the joy of being a stay-at-home dad 2 days this week and playing with him, and it was a lot of fun.
So am I correct to guess that the cast on his arm is, like, almost irrelevant to him now?
Yeah, it's uses it as a weapon, though, with the cat,
right, exactly.
With me.
Exactly. I mean, thank God he's not in any pain or anything that's overwhelming in any way. So little kids at that age, after a while, it's just another appendage.
Yeah, I realize applesauce and a cast don't don't work well together. It was seeping in his hands.
I love it.
Oh,
I love
boy.
It. So I understand you're going to be a derelict father coming up pretty soon. I'm really, really upset with you. You're going to Hawaii with your wife and leaving your son behind at a foster care facility.
By the foster care being my parents. They, you know, it's amazing. We were originally thinking about taking him with us, and my parents, so gracious, they said, you know what? We think that it'd be really great if the two of you could get away. We'll watch Judah for the whole week. So kind of them. So, yes,
all right.
We are abandoning.
I want Erica to take some video of you surfing.
It'd be great. You know what's wonderful, too, is...
Or take a GoPro. Do you have a GoPro?
Oh, I need to get one. Those are phenomenal. Those are so phenomenal. But I'm going to be doing some stand-up paddleboarding, too, which would be even
easier.
I've been
wanting to do that. Maybe you'll teach that to me someday here.
Would love that.
So listen, off of the all that joyful stuff, let's talk sadly about a pernicious problem in our world. As long as you've been alive, as long as I've been alive, there's been drugs. I believe the power and the proliferation and the access to them is greater than it's ever been. And the dangers are the same, but I'm seeing evidence of ruined and lost lives everywhere. My column this week is about a friend of mine whose son had to be put in rehab for heroin use. I mean, in my day, the worst thing anybody did was hash, which was, I guess, I'm very naive. I just thought hash was a more potent marijuana. But nobody did cocaine. Nobody did ecstasy. Nobody did LSD except Timothy Leary, and we would just listen to music about it. Heroin was just for some dark alley somewhere. So the fact that affluent kids are actually smoking or shooting up heroin is pretty frightening. I talked to a black friend of mine, African-American, I guess is a politically correct thing, and she said, you know what's interesting? In the black community, there's very little heroin use because they can't afford it. There's a lot more heroin use in the affluent white community. Now, I don't know if that's true, but I thought that was a very interesting statement from her. So tell me any thoughts you have on this not easy topic.
No, it's not easy at all. You know, the three communities I've been, living in my entire life have been La Cañada, so that's, you know, middle upper class affluent, the Westlake Village, Thousand Oaks area, you know, middle upper class affluent, and now, though I'm not living out there, but I'm serving out at Bel Air Presbyterian Church, and that's kind of the Encino, Sherman Oaks, but also, you know, up on the hill near the Getty, you get a lot from the west side and Beverly Hills,
mm-hmm.
and unique to all three of those cultures is this tremendous amount of access to what I would call very, very hard drugs. I mean, it's getting younger and younger. I've known of middle school age students having access to heroin, to methamphetamines, to cocaine, and it was something that I saw around me as a high school student at an all-boys Catholic school. I remember one kid getting carried out in a stretcher because he dropped acid in the back of biology class. So this is one of my classmates. Saw that all around me. And then, you know, as I got older, working out at Calvary, presided over many, many memorial services for whether it was a drug overdose or an accident related to...
Or suicide because of drugs.
Yes.
We put three young men into their graves in the course of 1 week when my older son was in high school. When I say we, I mean the community. And each one was a drug-related death. One was a kid high and angry and depressed who stole his parents' car and drove off a cliff. Another one jumped off a bridge. And a third was a kid that got really stoned high on whatever. His friends saw him pass out on the couch. They figured, oh, he'd sleep it off. And he slept it off permanently. In 1 week.
And, you know, I don't know if I ever told you, it was that third story that I officiated that memorial service.
No, you didn't tell me. Was that the kid whose friends left him?
Yes, and in our community. And so, you know, having walked with that family, you know, kind of on the inside during that time, tremendous, tremendous pain, heartache. And, you know, in the midst of all that, it stirs up emotions even for me personally, because my younger brother, as a freshman in college, his roommates had brought back, you know, one night, it was like a Friday night, they were all freshman year rooming together, and they had these morphine tablets, you know, this is, you know, like in a prescription bottle. Mm-hmm. And they passed one out to everybody had the same amount, and my younger brother, he went to bed like everybody else at the end of the night, and ended up waking up, or I should say, unlike everyone else, didn't wake up. His heart stopped.
From one morphine tablet.
Why morphine tablets that they brought?
No. I said it was, he took one along with all the other kids, but its chemistry with him caused his early death.
And see, that's the danger that, you know, as I've shared with friends of mine, students, families, parents, that you just never know. You know, you might have a friend who can... you know, shoot up heroin and he does okay, or does cocaine or takes a morphine tablet, but you just never know. You know,
you're a single one. I'm not saying that morphine is not dangerous, but the thing that we often don't know is, you know, we might have a little heart murmur. We might have a little brain something. We might have a little something that you just put the wrong substance in and it has a bad reaction. And then I still have a very hard time just wrapping my head around the fact that you could take a drug like that, not versus, say, a bottle. In other words, if you told me he was depressed and he took a bottle of pills, I would sort of understand it. But I don't know what the word is, randomness that one pill, morphine, which is the prescription pill for pain, could interact in your young brother's system to cause death is beyond random and frightening to me.
Yeah, you know, and that's why when you go to a doctor, one of the first things they ask you is you fill out a
form. Do you have a drug allergy?
Exactly, and there's a reason why they ask that. It's not just for fun. You know, there's chemical reactions that unless you're a trained doctor, and even trained doctors, you know, can miss things sometimes. But, you know, there's this, I think, this truth of addiction that goes beyond drugs, substances, to whatever it might be, that I've seen it firsthand. It creates an appetite that becomes larger and larger and larger the more that appetite is tried to be satiated. You know, we know it. You know, if one pill, the next month it needs to be two pills. The next month it needs to be this and that. And, you know, it so reminds me of how restless we are as humans, that we look for things to fill us up. We look for things to make us whole. And there's a old quote from a guy named Augustine, and I love this. He says, God, you have made us for yourself, and our heart is restless until it finds its rest in you.
Mm.
And that's like the 4th century, you know. I think that's a good reminder for us today, that our heart is restless.
Well, human beings are the same. The circumstances and the technology changes, but we are the same species. the same emotions, the same loves, the same hates. Look, the point of my column was that a lot of parents are naive. What, just quickly off the top of your head, what things should parents be conscious of, and when should they step in and when should they not, in your experience, based on these horrific stories you've personally suffered and witnessed and presided over?
Sure. Well, you know, advice I've heard you give so many times in your columns and on the air is that, you know, as parents, we need to be parents before we're our kids' friends.
Yes.
And so often do I see parents just saying, oh, I don't want them to get upset with me, you know, I should just let them. Asking the tough questions, who are you hanging out with? You know, why didn't you come back at, you know, curfew? You know, let me look into your eyes, you know, when you come back home. You know, doing the tough love that parents have to do, even if their kids get mad at them, it could save their life.
So true. And that means searching their rooms. That means going through their computer. That means going through their phone. That stuff's not going to win you their friendship, but in the end, it'll win you their love. My friend whose son is in rehab told me that his the guy who's presides over the clinic that his son is in is a addict, a recovering addict, and that he said the best thing his parents ever did for him was they threw him out of the house when he was 17 after continual drug abuse and alcohol abuse. And he was mad at his parents, furious, but he had to hit bottom, in his case, thankfully not dead bottom, to realize the dangers and the risks and then seek help. And as you know, there's only one program that works. It's the 12-step program. Mm-hmm. That program involves, they call it a higher power because they, I guess, want to appeal to everybody, but it's God-based. And it's very ethereal in its own weird way, but it works. And that's, again, when you think outside of yourself and give yourself over to that higher power or God.
Well, how amazing for those parents so many years ago to make that hard, hard decision to kick their 17-year-old son out. Now look at the multiplied benefit of that decision, the fact that he's counseling you know, young men and women, trying to help them through their recovery. I think is just a reminder that, you know, our decisions as parents will not only affect our kids' life, but in many, many lives beyond.
Indeed. So any other thoughts, any other, we have to break soon, but before we do, any other tips you want to offer?
Well, I think that there's something powerful about community. And I think that parents being able to connect with other parents, to almost have a network so that they're not feeling like they have to do it alone. You know, there's that old African proverb that Hillary Clinton made famous here in the U.S. that it takes a village to raise a child. You know, that's not a Democratic party.
Are you talking about that poverty-stricken former First Lady, Hillary Clinton? Is that the one you're talking about?
Well, I can't speak to that aspect.
The poor broke after she left the White House
yes.
Person.
So she needs a village around her.
I happen to think that's the only thing of wisdom that ever came out of her mouth is the quote that you attributed to her or her, that she made famous. Because it's true. In today's world, you do need help. There are just too many outside influences for any parent or parents to do it alone. And then you have the single parents that are juggling so many difficult tasks. If they didn't have someone else that were their eyes and ears and didn't rely on it, their kids are at that much more risk. And the mixed family unit is now the majority. So the traditional family unit is, for the first time in American history, is now the minority. So that community you reference is more and more important. Listen, we're out of time for this segment, Pastor Drew. We could have gone on forever. I appreciate your candor. Please tell our listeners where they can find you. And does this mean I'm not going to have you next week?
You know, that's a great question. I'm going to have to follow up with the text just to see where I'll be in my week schedule. But on all social networks, at Surfer Drew.
Okay, 3 hours earlier there, just so you know. So it's early
in
the morning.
That could help, definitely.
You know, maybe you want to do it if you're just sitting in your condo or in your hotel room. Okay, once again, where can people find you?
So on all social networks, at Surfer Drew, and our church's website is Bel Air Press with 1S.org.
Okay, terrific. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful, wonderful time. Wear sunblock and take video.
Amen. All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. We'll be back after this break, probably with just me. Dr. Weberman is probably feeding her baby. She was going to join us, but she's not. So stay tuned and we'll see if she does.